When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
The British Oscar Schindler, The Life and Works of Nicholas Winton. When Winton cancelled his skiing holiday in favour of going to Prague to visit a friend, little did he know this decision would change the course of thousands of lives. It is, of course, the subject of a recent film starring Sir Anthony Hopkins. It's also the subject of a new book by Edward Abel Smith. Delighted to say that Edward joins us live on the line to tell us more about the fascinating life of Nicholas Winton. Morning to you, Edward.
Hi, Giles. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. We'll talk about a book being precedent because it's been all over the media recently, of course, with this this film with Anthony Hopkins. Tell us a little bit more, then, about your fascination with this particular period in history and also Winton himself.
Well, I was actually very lucky to meet Winton a few times before he died. And I was really blown away by this incredibly unassuming man who was, he was very modest, also had a very kind of wicked sense of humor, but didn't appear to me to be like what I expected as a teenager, what a hero in inverted commas would be like. So that was the initial fascination for me. And then looking into the story more, I realized that and found out that Winton very much didn't act alone, and he was surrounded by some equally impressive and inspiring people.
So what was, and one of the things, because I was listening to, because I'm a podcast junkie and I'm listening to Dan Snow's podcast, and he was talking about meeting Winton as well, and saying he was, even though he was in his 90s at that point, he was as bright as a button and quite physically active and lived in a very sort of unassuming sort of 60s style place in the sort of leafy suburbs.
Yeah, I met him when he was over 100. And he was walking. I mean, he had a stick with him, but he kind of quickly chose probably one of the most attractive women present to link arms with, and was sort of walking around with her. But yeah, he had a very dry sense of humour, but equally had a very kind of powerful message that I think he got across in a really kind of clever way.
And it's very easy to. And quite rightly so, to make people like this heroes, as if everything they do in their lives is heroic, and they have, if you like, they know they're going to be men of destiny and men who make a difference. But of course, life isn't like that. And I had no idea that, because if you look at sort of films, you just think, okay, Winton decided something must be done. But I had no idea he was going to head out on a skiing holiday, and he diverted it. So give me a little of the flavour of Winton's, if you like, pre-kinder transport life.
Well, he grew up. He had a relatively comfortable upbringing. He lived in a 20-roomed house in Hampstead. He had a cook, a couple of maids. There was a nanny as well looking after him. And he went off to a school, a newly opened boarding school in Buckinghamshire called Stowe School, where he was into lots of quite kind of diverse hobbies such as fencing, horse riding, and my personal favourite was pigeon fancying.
Yeah, I mean Stowe was quite progressive, wasn't it, in terms of education?
Yeah, and he didn't necessarily excel hugely in the classroom, but it was outside the classroom that he really kind of became the man he would be. And when he left, he originally wanted to be a solicitor, but didn't have the right kind of academic credentials to do that. So he ended up going into banking, and this was partly to kind of help support his family. And that was pretty mundane for him. He did get to spend a couple of years in Germany, which he thoroughly enjoyed, and that was sort of in the build up to World War II. So he was there in 1929. So he saw a lot of the impact of the post World War I depression. But life was relatively mundane for Winton until, as you say, just before New Year's Eve, 1938, that he got a phone call from his friend Martin Blake, who said, "You know, I know we're due to go off skiing in Switzerland, but I've come to Prague instead, and I think there's something here that we could help with." And that really changed his life forever.
And this is the thing, because a lot of people would have just gone, "Oh well, it's sort of Germany's affair." We've had the situation where, obviously, we've had the Anschluss, where Germany has taken over Austria. Is that 37 or 30? I'm just trying to remember off the top of my head.
38.
Okay. And he's been, you know, Hitler's been greeted in raptures because he's an Austrian. And then there are a lot of Germans because they need elbow room. They need living space, don't they? This is the whole thing. And there are a lot of ethnic Germans in Czechoslovakia. So that's next on the list. And of course, as that gets taken over, you have the appalling situation with what's going to happen with the Jewish, you know, the huge Jewish populations there. But a lot of people either feigned indifference or just were completely indifferent to the situation.
Yeah, they were, and in a way, it's, you know, if you look at the backdrop of World War One, understandably so, the desired outcome was appeasement. The avoidance of another war, which obviously was what ultimately resulted. Winton, and I really like this, he wrote in a letter, an open letter, and he called it the difference between passive goodness and active goodness. And the latter being not just sitting at home, as it were, and condemning something you don't like the sound of or you think is wrong, but actively doing something about it. And I really think that kind of embodies him as a person, because, as you say, he not only decided to go to Prague, and there were a fair few, I mean, obviously not hundreds, but there were a fair few people going there and seeing what was happening for themselves, but very, very few of them who actually decided to do something about it, and even fewer of them who followed it through so successfully.
So Winston, presumably after a stint in Germany in banking, speaks pretty good German, I would imagine. That's going to help him.
Yeah, it sort of helped him to an extent. Obviously, German at the time was the language of the enemy. So there were quite a few, thought to be quite a few agents in and around Prague at the time, and I'm certain that there actually were. So he was actually greeted with quite a lot of skepticism because of his German, and he learned one phrase in Czech, which was "I speak German, but I'm actually English," and that's what he would sort of open every conversation with, rather than trying to learn Czech. He started with that. And a big part of what he did was actually building the confidence with parents of children to persuade them to allow him to take them to Britain.
So he's how old is he at this point, by the way? Because we seem to think of Winton as this as the guy who's on That's Life, but he's a young, yeah. Presumably he's a young man.
He's under 30. He's a 29-year-old stockbroker from London.
Right. So what are the nuts and bolts? Because I mean, the world is full of do-gooders who rock up and go, "Right, I'm going to change the world. I'm going to help you," and know absolutely nothing, and are actually more of a hindrance. So what's the plan, if you like?
Well, the plan was kind of developed over about a three or four week period. Because the other thing to say is, Winton was only in Prague for 3 weeks, And there were lots of other people who were there for, 4, 5, 6 months. But he was there for a very short period of time. And really, certainly when he first went out there, he didn't know what the outcome would be. And early on, he was looking at, could he bring families to Britain, or certainly bring families out of Prague. Up to that point, Kinder Transport was actually relatively well established from other parts of Europe, most notably, obviously, Germany. And a lot of so the kind of process of getting visas and travel permits for children to travel unaccompanied, Winton soon found out was actually relatively straightforward, or more straightforward, I should say, than bringing families out. So his plan started to develop from bringing as many as he could out to just bringing children out. And then he had to work on finding foster parents and homes in the UK for people to for the children to stay in. And also each child needed needed a financial guarantee as well. So he needed to raise money. It's about £50 at the time. So obviously, not an insignificant amount of money at the time for each child. And that money was to cover their the government's ability to then send them back to their families once the conflict was over.
And how receptive were? I mean, how do you go about that? I mean, does he put an advert in the Prague Daily, or is there a network ready to go out? I'm not just meaning to sound facile by when I say that, but is there a network of people who already want to get out? Are the population thinking, okay, we want to use this guy, or are they a bit dubious about him? They're wondering what there's an ulterior motive, and presumably the Nazis just want to get rid of the Jewish population. They don't really care if they, and again, not sounding facile, how they get rid of them. They just want them out.
Absolutely. And the final solution, it was implemented a few years later, but up to that point, the policy was to remove as many Jewish individuals from Third Reich territories as possible. So you're absolutely right. The Germans were actually, almost quite supportive of this effort. And there was a Gestapo chief who moved to Prague, who said to one of Winton's associates, his only main question was why Britain wanted so many Jews, not about anything other than that. There were several charities at the time who were looking to help children, so parents were signing their children up to these charities, but a lot of it was just word of mouth. Soon after Winton arrived, he would come out of his, he would have a knock on the door in his hotel at sort of 6 a.m. And he wrote that the first time this happened, he still had his sort of shaving foam on his face, and he went and opened the door, and there was a queue of families outside his hotel room. And they were all wanting to get their children out. So a lot of it was word of mouth.
And is it 8 trains he gets in the night? Yeah.
Yeah, he got 8 transports out, and actually only one of those trains left before the Nazi occupation of Czechoslovakia. So the latter 7 all went once the country was occupied, and then went through Germany. So it was quite a precarious travel arrangement for the children. He did arrange for some aeroplanes to leave as well prior to the trains starting, but because he didn't find the foster parents for them at the other end, as it were, they've never been counted into his into the 669 children that he saved. But actually, from my research, he did actually help a lot more.
And what's you talk about, imagine the 6 a.m. and because we talk about the investment of people and the investment of time and the investment of money that goes with removing these children. But there's an emotional investment as well. If it's 6 a.m. and you're halfway through shaving your face and you open the door and there's a queue of families and children, you can be as detached as you like, but you're going to have an emotional investment on this, aren't you? And you'd have to have a heart of granite not to be affected by this.
Absolutely, and I think a big Winton is quite famous for being so modest and not really, you know, the story not really coming to light till many years later in 1988 in on That's Life. And a big part of that was his modesty, but I also think a big part of it was the kind of shame he felt about not being able to help more children, because as you say, he had a huge emotional investment. And came back to Britain with a list of about 5,000 children who he could save, and he saved 669. But you know, he even had a train ready to leave with 251 children on it on the 1st of September, and sadly, as war was declared, that train wasn't able to leave. So there were all of those children, but also so many more. That may have come after that, if events had taken a different turn. So I think he was hugely, he was very emotionally attached. And as I said, I think that, I don't know how much he saw this as being a success for most of his life.
And one of the things about those who were in the Second World War, who fought in the Second World War, who served in the Second World War, who were just in the Second World War, it was after the war, people got on with it. They just got on with normal lives. I mean, when I'm ever doing stuff on the Second World War, I'm amazed by these guys who were in Bomber Command or in the, because there's obviously a lot of traffic at the moment about the United States Air Army Air Force and 8th Bomber Command because of Masters of the Air, etc. And a load of them come back and they go back to farming or they go back to working in their communities and they don't mention it, they don't talk about it. And Winston's a classic. I mean, he's not fighting, but he's involved in the Second World War. But when he comes back, as you said, he almost goes under the radar until this famous 88 That's Life.
Absolutely, and I think that's what I agree with you. I find that absolutely fascinating. That all of this happened before war broke out. So then Winton, spent his he didn't fight on the front line necessarily. He was originally a conscientious objector, but he spent time in France, helping around, driving an ambulance during Dunkirk, and spent a lot of time doing ARP work, and also joined the RAF as a trainer, a fight simulator trainer. He wanted to actually join properly, but his eyesight didn't allow him to. He wanted to become a pilot. So he went through all of that as well. And then had a pretty awful job after the war, dealing with a lot of the stolen goods from Jewish communities. So there's quite a famous pictures of the barrels full of wedding rings and barrels full of children's toys and so forth. Winton was actually directly responsible for collecting that, with the gold rings. He had that all melted down and then sold, and then the money was given back to Jewish communities in Europe. So he went through a really sort of harrowing post-world period as well. So it was almost a bit of a footnote in his life, this whole children's rescue. Later on in the 50s, in 1954, he stood as to be a Labour councillor, and he wrote out some of his credentials, and one of the many bullet points is just a slight mention to some of the stuff that he did in the war and before the war. But as I said, it was, in his mind, it was like a real kind of footnote in everything else that he did around that time, and everything else, thousands and thousands of other people did.
And so he sort of blends into the background in leafy suburbia and during the 60s and 70s and retires. And then there's this, this quite remarkable documentary. Anybody's got YouTube will have seen this. Anybody's seen the film will see this scene. I mean, how did that all come about? I mean, he wasn't expecting this.
Well, I think it's told really well in the film, and I'd really encourage everyone to, if you're able to go and see it, I really encourage you to. It's told very well in the film that he had this scrapbook that was made for him during his time in Prague, and it sat in a drawer of his desk for many, many years. And he was trying to find out what to do with the scrapbook. And, part of it was this shame of not being able to help more children. Also his sort of modesty. He didn't want to, he didn't really know what to do with it. And he was persuaded by his wife to that it should form part of the historical record of the Holocaust. And it was during that whole process that it finally made its way into the hands of the BBC, who invited him along to a production of That's Life, where I believe he knew that it was going to be talked about, but obviously he didn't know that he was going to be sitting either side, or either side of him were going to be children that he saved. And then when he came back a few weeks later, that's that famous clip when pretty much everyone in the audience stands up around him. And from there, his life changed dramatically.
I mean, what was his reaction to that? Because, I mean, it's, you know, this is 40 years after, 40 something years after the events, and these children are now have lives and children of their own. And, you know, I mean, in the words of the, a meme, it was mind officially blown by that, because these are, you know,
I think that's the best way of describing it. Yeah, I think it was a remarkable moment for him, but also something that gets forgotten is how remarkable it was for all of those sitting around him, because these now elderly individuals who you know, many of whom Winton would actually outlive, you know, they all called themselves his children, but you know, he outlived many of them. They didn't know how they'd got out of Prague, and they didn't know what had actually happened then. So for them, this was a huge sort of discovery of who had saved them, how it had come about. So I think it was equally mind blowing for the children as well as for Winton.
And presumably that after that TV appearance, there's a bond. They have reunions. I mean, it's obviously fascinating. I mean, who wouldn't be? Because out of those over 600 children he saved, some of them have remarkable lives as translators, as diplomats, as working in the community. I mean, it really is a wonderful story.
It is. And I think for Winton, how amazing to, as you say, to see what kind of diverse careers and lives these individuals have led, whether it's, as you say, world famous architects, politicians, and so forth. So it was really amazing for Winton to see the impact of his actions, of not only saving, you know, as you say, these 669 children and probably more, but also what they'd gone on to achieve and the lives that they were leading now. And he did build amazing bonds with all of them, and they rightly and understandably really rallied together to make sure that he was properly recognised for what he did.
And obviously, his wife is an important figure in this as well, isn't she? Because I mean, it's very easy for his part to be able to, for his wife, his part to be overlooked in this whole situation, but she is the bedrock, as so often.
Yeah, she absolutely is, and you know, they married just after the war. In 1948, and then, you know, we're married for over 50 years before she sadly passed away. But she was a real a real support for him through, you know, this whole period of him becoming, you know, almost becoming a celebrity. I think you'd hate that terminology, but he became a very well known figure, and she supported him throughout that.
So when you come to writing this, I mean, you said you met him yourself. I mean, what was the spark behind putting this one together?
I think it originally came from the fact that when looking into this, and in the film, they talk about some other characters. They talk about a lady called Doreen Warriner and a man called Trevor Chadwick. And I sort of I knew a fair amount about Nicholas Winton when I started researching this, but it was only when I started to dig a bit deeper did I find all these other incredible characters. And I just thought it was such a brilliant story to tell. And it's, you know, it is actually ultimately his story, but there are so many others that helped him. And I found it very interesting as well that the older he got and the more sort of well known he got, the more he was trying to sort of debunk these rumors that he was kind of, you know, that there were lots of things about him kind of running around Prague, you know, hiding from the Gestapo and, you know, dodging bullets and stuff, which was, you know, far from reality. This was ultimately a huge sort of logistical and administrative operation. But he did have those types of people associated with him. So I think it was that kind of whole combination coming together that I thought it would make a brilliant story. And I was so pleased to see it it being, you know, the story becoming a film as well, because it really does justice to those events.
Well, indeed. I mean, it being a film that doesn't have, you know, doesn't have Nicholas Winton as a sort of prototype James Bond, Ian Fleming. I know you've written about, you know, sort of leaping out of windows with a child under each arm.
Thank you for mentioning that, Charles. That's very kind of you. Yeah. I mean, it portrays him, I think, exactly as in a really good light. Obviously, I didn't know him when he was younger, but his sense of humor really comes out during the film, and you have like a real kind of chuckle throughout, but also this kind of, you know, very unassuming character. I think Anthony Hopkins plays him brilliantly, and all of those around him and his mother, you know, Helen Bonham Carter plays his mother, Barbara Winton, really well as well. And I think that, you know, I never knew her, but that's exactly how I imagined she would be.
And it's fascinating, isn't it, because the Second World War continues to amaze us and intrigue us and throw up these amazing stories of ordinary men and women throughout, both just before the war, during the conflict, and afterwards as well. I mean, there are millions of stories of ordinary men and women making a difference. And it's only now, with the remove, as this generation passes away, that people are finding scrapbooks and they're finding diaries that have been hidden away for decades and bring it to life. And people like yourselves can shine a light on it.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, these little kind of nuggets that come out. And whenever you hear about story, when people sort of say, oh, I can't believe we've never heard of that before, you know, you know you're onto a good one. So there are so many of these coming out, and I think they will continue to. And I think what we also need to remember is that we're probably only talking about, you know, under 1% of all of the, you know, amazing stories and the amazing things that happened during that period.
What do you hope that people take from your book, the British Oscar Schindler?
I didn't catch a word of that. Sorry, Giles.
What do you hope that people take and learn from the book?
I think that I don't think Winton would ever want to be referred to as a hero, but I think that. That hit him, it's a part of our history that we're so proud of. And I just hope that, you know, that there may, I'm sure there are people now who will be doing things and be inspired by Winton, and do things equally as remarkable. And hopefully in 50, 100 years time, people may be talking about that.
The book is called The British Oscar Schindler, The Life and Works of Nicholas Winton. It's by Edward Abel Smith, who we're talking to today. Edward, if people want to find you online, is there a website? Are you on social media? Where can people find you?
You can find me on www.edwardablesmith.com. And I am on Twitter as well. So please feel free to get in touch.
And the book is also available for order from our own virtual bookstore. The book is called The British Oscar Schindler, The Life and Works of Nicholas Winton. Edward, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Likewise. Thank you for having me, Giles.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.